You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
This podcast contains adult themes and language, and some of the things that we discuss may be disturbing to some listeners. In this podcast, we discuss sexual assault, torture, race, and murder. Listener discretion is advised. Please take care of yourself.
Welcome to Fruit Loops, episode 209. Bienvenidos, bitches, and BTB Nafi, and thank you for being here and listening.
Yeah.
Now, Fruit Loops is a podcast about true crimes committed by people of color and those who are othered and the victims, because contrary to popular belief, not all serial killers are straight cisgender, able-bodied white dudes.
What?
I'm telling you, girl, and these crimes rarely get any public attention because the news is racist. It is a lot of ists, but that is all allegedly.
And we are Wendy and Beth. She's Wendy, a Black Latinx woman. And I'm Beth, and I just happen to be white.
That's right. She's one of the good ones.
And we're not journalists, investigators, or psychologists. Just a couple of gals interested in true crime. Also, the opinions expressed in this podcast are just that, our opinions.
All right. So who are we talking about today, Beth?
Today we're talking about Frederick Pete Cox, a Black man who went on a killing spree in March and April of 1997, murdering three women and assaulting two others.
Okay, so before we get into it, why don't you tell me, Beth, how you doing?
I'm doing great. So we're recording this prior to CrimeCon, and I've right. got that pre-CrimeCon excitement. So I'm feeling really good. But by the time this airs, it will be after CrimeCon. So I'm interested to see how it went.
I know. Well, future Beth, I can't wait to hear how it went either.
Yeah.
LOL.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I am feeling very focused. I have not had any caffeine pills today.
Wow.
And I have been using Magic Mind. Now, did you get your Magic Mind?
Yeah. And it is amazing. It's amazing.
It's kind of unreal, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. So just real quick, Magic Mind, Culture Corner. No, just kidding. No, it's not a Culture Corner. Magic Mind is like this.
It's a drink.
And it gives you energy and focus. It's got all these natural ingredients and it's tasty. And if you want to avoid having a cardiologist because you consume too much caffeine, give it a try. But anyway, just making sure Beth got hers today. So good.
Yeah. I was blown away. I mean, seriously, this is just good stuff.
That's what I was saying. Like, does anybody else know about this? Because
I have so much energy, but I'm not stressed out.
Yeah.
It's like chill energy. I don't even know how to describe it.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I don't know either. I just know
it works.
We really did, like, for reals use it and for reals make it.
It works. I need more.
Yeah. Yeah. We need more. They're sponsoring the show and we think everybody should listen. So check out the promo code in our ad. But anyway, we know not everybody should listen. Everybody should go and get it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, all is well. Let's get into some listener letters.
Well, hello, angels. Thank you.
Woo. All right. What's in that bag, Beth?
Well, I don't have anything in the bag, but I think you do.
Yeah. I just wanted to shout out to our Fruity and Patreon for a long time. We love you. Tara M. And Tara commented on our recent Extra Extra episode saying, oh, I'm going to miss Extra Extra because we're going to be at CrimeCon.
Right.
And Tara said, have fun. I hope I get the time to go next year. And it honestly sounds like you ladies need a relaxing vacation. No worries. No responsibilities. Yeah. Just a little R&R. Love you, ladies. Look forward to the next episode. And Tara, we love you too.
Yeah. Thank you. Horns.
We look forward to meeting you next year.
Yeah, we hope you can make the next one.
We sure as shit do.
It's a blast.
Yeah. And we are just excited to tell you guys how it all went. So
yeah.
We wouldn't be there without our Patreons and all of our supporters and all the things. We're so grateful. So thank y'all.
Yeah. And I just wanted to say, please send any questions or comments to FruitLoopsPod@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 602-935-6294. And we may feature it on a future episode. Also, join us on Patreon, where we have literally hundreds of hours of bonus content. And we have a video club for 12 plus patrons where you can interact with us in person.
Yeah. Now, let's take a quick break and then we'll get into the story when we come back.
We would like to take this moment to tell you about our sponsor, Magic Mind.
So Magic Mind came into my life at the exact right time. My life is very busy. I'm a podcaster. I have a full-time job. I have children, a partner.
Yeah, I have a full-time job and a second full-time job podcasting. So I don't know how you do all of those things.
Me neither. But all of those things require focus and attention. Frankly, I cannot survive without caffeine. Usually my caffeine intake consists of, in the morning, first thing, Coke Zero, 2 caffeine pills. Then coffee, green tea throughout the rest of the day, pop another caffeine pill or two if I need it. And when you have that much caffeine in your system, it makes it almost impossible to sleep. So yeah. I also have to take sleep aids. It's a mess.
Yeah. But cut to Magic Mind.
Yes. So I was skeptical, but I tried it for a week and I swear I did not need the caffeine pills or coffee.
Wow.
Yeah. It was, I was like, oh, I haven't had any coffee today. I love it. It makes it easy to incorporate it into my morning routine. It's this little tasty shot. And so after 7 days of drinking Magic Mind, I had mental energy. I noticed I was more focused. I was more productive. I was sleeping better and generally less stressed and anxious.
Nice.
And my husband is like this super like health conscious guy. And he tried it too and he loves it too.
Magic Mind is the world's first productivity drink. It's got all natural ingredients sourced from the best suppliers they could find. There is no sugar. It's nut-free, vegan, keto, and paleo friendly. It's got ingredients that you can actually pronounce.
Whoa.
And regular degular folks can understand, like honey, ashwagandha, and lion's mane, which is an adaptogen that reduces stress and anxiety.
Yes, all good stuff. And also ingredients that I'm not sure what they do, but saying them sure makes me feel good and sound smart. Try it. Say adaptogens and nootropics. So if you're thinking, whoa, Wendy is a sexy genius. How does she do it? Well, Magic Mind definitely helps.
And Magic Mind also has a 100% money back guarantee. No questions asked. So there's no risk. If you don't like it, you can get a refund. Magic Mind stands behind their product because it works. It works for me. And I bet it can work for anyone out there struggling with energy, focus, and generally wanting to feel better.
So go to magicmind.com/Fruit Loops and get up to 56% off your subscription for the next 10 days with our code FruitLoops20.
The code again is FruitLoops20. Just go to the website and get 56% off your subscription.
All right, we're back. Remind us, Beth, who is our subject today?
Our subject today is Frederick Pete Cox, an Orlando resident who murdered 3 women and injured 2 others in 1997.
Frederick, the Florida man.
Yep.
So now we're going to get into our next segment where we just acknowledge the victims in this case. And we want to give love and light to all the victims and the community and loved ones left in the wake of this tragic case. So the victims are Rest in Power Queens, Patricia Ann Logan, 40, Stephanie Elizabeth Singleton, 26, Mary Ann Vopel, 22. All of these women were mothers and loved by their families. We should say again that we tried to find out details of the victims' lives, but in this case, we could not find any.
On some of them.
On some of them, sorry.
Yeah.
So if we give details about some but not others, it's just because we weren't able to get them, not because we do not care.
Yeah.
And if you're out there listening and you happen to know some information to shed some light on these victims, who they were, get at us. Because we would love to share as well. So also, he attacked 5 women total. 3 of them were murdered,
right.
Just listed their names. And 2 survived. The survivors of the attacks are Tracy Adams, who was 34, and Yolanda Niels, who was 28. So now, let's get into the setting. Take us there, Beth.
Well, the setting is Orlando, Florida. The geography of Orlando is mostly wetlands, consisting of many lakes and swamps. The terrain is generally flat, making the land low and wet, and it is dotted with hundreds of lakes, the largest of which is Lake Apopka. The area was originally inhabited by the Timucua and Seminole peoples.
Between 1817 and 1858, there was a series of 3 military conflicts between the United States and the Seminoles of Florida. That's a lot of conflicts.
Yeah.
Shouldn't at some point somebody give up?
Yeah, just stop.
Yeah. But no, they didn't. It was dubbed the Seminole Wars. In 1838, during the Second Seminole War, the U.S. Army built Fort Gatlin during the construction of a series of fortified encampments all across the state of Florida.
When the U.S. military abandoned the fort in 1839, the surrounding community became the town of Jernigan, which was renamed Orlando in 1857. Prior to the Civil War, the area was a cotton and cattle center. After the war, citrus became the leading industry. The South Florida Railroad arrived in 1880 and was extended to Tampa in 1883.
In the 1950s, the development of the Cape Canaveral Aerospace Complex, 50 miles east, spurred population and economic growth. Walt Disney World opened in 1971, about 20 miles southwest, spurring even more growth. Wow!
The area was chosen by Disney in part because of Orlando's inland location. Although not totally free from hurricanes, being inland means that the hurricanes are less of a threat than in the coastal regions.
Disney World, I have always known it is the shit, is what everybody says, but I cannot bring myself to go there. But I am interested in Universal Studios Orlando, Florida. That's where all the kids shows were filmed in when I was a kid on Nickelodeon.
They
had P.O. boxes. So if you'd loved a show, you could send them a card or a letter to their P.O. box. Universal Studios Orlando, Florida.
I didn't know that.
Totally pointless information. Moving on. Today, tourism, conventions, and trade shows, like CrimeCon, are the basis of the city's economy. Orlando now has more theme parks and entertainment attractions than anywhere else in the world. Wow. The Disney complex alone covers 47 square miles.
Wow.
So that's basically the whole economy of Florida. I mean, that's Miami who?
So our subject today lived in Pine Hills, a neighborhood located just 5 miles west of the Paramore neighborhood in Orlando. The Paramore neighborhood, one of the more historic districts in downtown Orlando, is also historically Black.
Oh, interesting. Because segregation did not allow Black people to live in the city's predominantly white neighborhoods, the Paramore neighborhood was one of the only places that they could live. During the 1930s to the 1950s, Paramore was the economic hub for Black people in Central Florida, drawing visitors to businesses, doctors, restaurants, and shops. I imagine it was a important place on the Green Book. I wonder.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Places to stay and eat. Sign me up without getting lynched. Oh, yeah.
I like that. Yeah. It was also a center for entertainment with several venues where famous musicians performed. The most popular spot was South Street Casino, a club built by Dr. Wells, which was located next to his Wells-built hotel. This was where, the South Street Casino is where Cab Calloway, Ella Fitzgerald, Ray Charles, B.B. King, and many others played.
Wow.
And the entertainers stayed at the Wells-built hotel.
Okay, and Dr. Wells, should we know any anything else?
So Dr. Wells, his name was Dr. William Monroe Wells. Mm-hmm. And he was a Black physician who became a healthcare and economic icon for the Paramore community in the early 1900s.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Well, I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Thanks, Dr. Wells. Well, today the hotel has been transformed into the Wells Built Museum of African American History. The museum features over 6,000 square feet of display space showcasing artifacts, turn of the century decor, and memorabilia. It retains the original hotel facade and a guest room featuring authentic furniture and decorations of the 1930s. Woo!
I think that would be amazing to go there.
I do too. One of the things I love is Black people's style since the beginning of time. And I would love to get my eyeballs
to see
on that. Yeah.
Yeah. So back to Pine Hills. The area that would become Pine Hills began in 1953 with the first subdivisions, Robinswood and Pine Ridge Estates, constructed along the newly completed Pine Hills Road north of Colonial Drive.
It was one of the first suburbs of Orlando and grew as a bedroom community for the workers of Martin Marietta, now Lockheed Martin. Lockheed Martin, okay. At the time, it was an upper middle class white suburb with a country club named Silver Pines. That sounds like the title of a horror movie.
It does. Silver Pines.
Are we sure it's not a horror movie?
I don't know, but maybe we should write one.
Okay.
But as newer neighborhoods developed offering more housing options, rental rates dropped and housing became more affordable. At the same time, fair housing laws were enacted. White residents moved out of the area in a phenomenon known as white flight, which happened in many predominantly white neighborhoods across the country at the time.
Yeah, but you know what's interesting? As I look around in the cities I've lived since I was a child, and I don't think white flight is over. It just shifts and moves.
Yeah.
But there's always...
Yeah, there's always some sort of white flight.
Sort of white flight. Anyway.
Yeah.
But back to Pine Hills. So Pine Hills is now majority Black at about 70% and is one of the most ethnically diverse regions of the greater Orlando metropolitan area. There are large Caribbean populations of Haitians, Jamaicans, and Puerto Ricans. And there's also a large Asian population of Vietnamese, Koreans, and Cambodians. The Latinx population is also above the state of Florida's average. Hello. I love that. It just seems like
that sounds awesome.
Oh, a rainbow of lovely flavors and smells and cultures everywhere.
Yeah.
I love it.
But when the white residents moved out, companies stopped investing in the area and schools in the area, and schools in Pine Hills dramatically lost funding. Into the late 1990s and early 2000s, Pine Hills acquired a negative public perception of the area in local media.
That's interesting. Pine Hills had the negative public perception, but Pine Hills didn't do anything wrong. People left.
Yeah.
This phenomenon has since been coined the Crime Hills narrative. That's not nice.
Yeah, that's what they called it, Crime Hills.
Not cool, man. Pine Hills has one of the highest rates of poverty in the state of Florida, although several flourishing neighborhoods exist where the median family income exceeds the area average. Almost half of all residents in Pine Hills make less than $45,000 a year, and the unemployment rate is 8.4%, which is more than double the national average.
Surprise, surprise. When communities are not invested in, they have a much higher rate of crime and poverty, not because the residents are inherently lacking in moral character, but because generations of governmental apathy and systemic destabilization has allowed for such problems to prosper.
I'm glad you said it. Thank you. I was just going to ask if Ron DeSantis was...
makes an appearance.
Yes, here he is. So, Governor Ron DeSantis is currently in the process of attempting to erase certain histories and facts that allow us to recognize and understand why poor communities and communities of color in Florida have an increased rate of drug abuse and violent crime compared to better funded areas. Tell us, Ron. Are you going to write a new textbook telling us the truth?
His truth.
Yeah, I don't think I want that.
No.
Ugh.
He also recently approved HB 7, Individual Freedom, Ugh. A bill, you know, if it's called individual freedom, it's going to be bad.
Be very bad.
It's going to be bad. Because it's always the opposite of what they call it.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I'm just thinking of an explosive diarrhea diaper from a child.
That's what it's going to be like.
This is bad.
So it's a bill that attempts to restrict the teaching of Black history and outlines the situations in which it's unlawful for employers and members of the K-12 education system to implement diversity.
It sounds like the opposite of freedom. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just
the exact opposite. Yeah.
So now let's get into Frederick Pete Cox's early life. Frederick Pete Cox was born on August 27th, 1953 in Tallahassee, Florida, but he moved with his family to Orlando at a young age.
He graduated from Jones High School in 1972, then joined the Army and served in Germany. In 1975, he married a German woman named Gabrielle. We don't know what became of that marriage.
After serving for 3 years, he was honorably discharged. He then lived and worked in Orlando, as well as serving in the Army Reserves. He had a string of different jobs in Orlando, including working for a few months as a corrections officer in 1978.
He was fired from that job for falling asleep at work.
Wait!
Never a good idea.
No, I wasn't allowed to do that.
Oh, no.
Yeah, not a good idea. He then worked as a telemarketer and continued spending one weekend a month drilling with the reserves until about 1996 when he injured his back and could no longer serve. Afterwards, he walked with a cane.
Interesting. So physically, not 100%.
Right.
Which makes what happens later on very unusual. So Cox had two sons, although they were grown by the time the murders occurred. Cox lived with his common-law wife, Rosena, and two German shepherds in a modest home off of West Colonial Drive in Orlando.
Cox had his first run-in with the law in 1988 when he was arrested at an adult bookstore for indecent exposure.
Oh.
He was masturbating in the store.
Wait, but they have like masturbation booths in those stores.
Apparently not in this one. Or he chose not to use a booth.
Right, because they aren't free, which totally sucks. So I get it. I'm just kidding.
Soon afterwards, in 1990, he was charged with possession of cannabis.
He pleaded no contest to both charges and agreed to perform community service. In 1991, he also volunteered for a group that helped addicts recover. Oh, I love that.
Family members said that he didn't talk much, but he was nice. However, neighbors described Cox as unfriendly and that he kept to himself. One neighbor who lived across the street said, quote, he was real, real quiet. He never talked to anyone, unquote.
That is, I mean, your family, blood is thicker than water, right? But for your family to say he was nice, that's it?
Yeah.
That's all my family has to say? That's terrible.
That's all I could find. Maybe they said other things too, but that's all I could find.
That's a bad sign. Wow.
He seems nice enough.
Yeah, he's my brother. I mean, he was nice, but I've never seen that before. And then things like, so your family is supposed to be the nicest people to you generally.
Right.
But they're not in this case, which is very telling. His hobby was operating a ham radio, which involves radio operators talking to each other over VHF and UHF frequencies. Don't know what that is. And his home had large antennas on its roof for this purpose. So it's like Stranger Things style, I would think.
Did they have big antennas on the roof?
I mean,
or did they have ham radios? I don't know.
I don't know exactly what a ham radio is, but it was in the 80s and there were radios that they used to communicate.
Oh, were they walkie-talkies?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So a ham radio is different. You can talk to people all over the world with a ham radio.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
We should get one. I mean, it's for the apocalypse.
Yeah. Actually, I think in The Walking Dead, one of the characters was talking to somebody on a ham radio.
Okay. Yeah, we should really look into that. Maybe a Radio Shack trip when we're at CrimeCon?
Okay.
So it's this radio that you can talk to people all over the world.
Yeah.
But his other hobby was driving around town in his tan Buick Park Avenue, picking up women he thought were sex workers and then shooting.
Not good. Not good.
Should have stuck to the radios.
Yeah, just the radios.
Just the radios alone.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
All right, so let's talk about batteries, specifically social batteries. Okay. Now, during the winter, you know, like my battery was like really drained and I really just couldn't wait for it to be over. And now that winter is gone, I am feeling more energized socially. So nice. I can manage having friends over at my house and going out to do things. But I have to do a lot of mental preparing.
Yeah.
And then I also have to have time to recover from the people and the things.
Oh, yeah. I get that. And I know there are people out there who are energized and even thrive on being around people.
Yeah.
But I am definitely not one of those people.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. The thing is, you know, sometimes our batteries can get drained when we say yes to all the things and to all the people. And we forget to, you know, set boundaries and set aside time and space for ourselves.
Everyone's different.
Right.
And the good news is that therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah.
I definitely had many sessions with my therapist about boundaries and positive coping skills. And therapy is, dare I say, empowering.
Yeah.
And it can help you become the bestest version of yourself and can help you determine when your battery is beyond depleted or needs a refresher.
Yeah. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/fruit today to get 10% off your first month.
That's better, HELP.com/fruit.
Ohio is a land of mystery, from missing shipwrecks and lost treasure beneath her surface to strange phenomena slicing through her skies, from myths that have evolved around historic events and people to the unsolved murders and disappearances that keep her communities wondering what happened. Find Ohio Mysteries on your favorite podcast app and let's explore the inexplicable. OhioMysteries.com.
Now let's get into the timeline. Hit it, Beth.
On March 12, 1997, 34-year-old Tracy Adams was returning home from work around midnight when her car got a flat tire. As she stopped to fix her tire, Cox approached her and asked for sex. That would be terrifying.
Which part?
You're just fixing your fucking tire and some dude comes up and asks for sex.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Not, hey, can I help you fix your tire? No.
Right. Right. Maybe there's got to be an adult film somewhere that has a beginning such as this.
Boom,
chicka wow wow. Hey, do you need your tire changed? Oh, ow. But yeah, you're right that if it's not in that context, this is incredibly terrifying, unexpected, unnecessary. And what does he want?
Sex.
Yes. And can't he see that I'm busy? No.
Thank you.
So she was not a sex worker and she refused his proposition. He reacted by shooting her in the arm and then he fled.
Ugh.
Yeah. So what a fucking coward.
What a dick.
Terrible question to ask. What did you think was going to happen? She says no. So you fucking shoot her? I don't know what to say, but Tracy, thank goodness she survived. But after healing, she had lingering issues and trouble with moving her arm.
2 weeks later, on March 25th, a hiker found the body of 40-year-old Patricia Logan. She'd been shot and her nude body dumped in a field near West Colonial Drive. It was determined by the state of decomposition that she had probably been murdered around March 20th.
On April 16th, Yolanda Niels, 28, was picked up by Cox, who she said was dressed professionally in a nice dress shirt and slacks. He promised her $25 for sex. Cox then drove her to a secluded area near Universal Studios, Orlando, Florida.
He parked and told her to get out of the car so they could have sex. Outside the car, he told her he'd been on a date with another girl and it didn't work out too well. He then shot her in the face.
What?
Yeah.
These escalate. Oh,
so fast. Quickly, yeah.
Too quickly for this to be, I don't know. It just, this feels like this couldn't have been the first two, is what I'm gathering.
Yeah.
Being such a nice, quiet guy to be this spontaneous.
He's not very nice.
No. Yeah. What the heck? So the bullet ripped through her cheek and she ran for her life as Cox kept shooting after her. She survived, although she was left with a speech impediment. Yolanda helped detectives develop a sketch of the suspect and identified the type of car he was driving.
Then on April 29th, the bodies of Stephanie Singleton and Marianne Vopel were found in a wooded section of Orlando's tourist area. Stephanie and Marianne were friends and they both had children.
It is kind of interesting to me. I guess we'll get into the investigation and the arrest later, but it sounds like these cases didn't go unsolved for too long.
Not too long, yeah. No.
Their lives had gone on a similar trajectory. Brought up in loving families as juveniles, they drifted into drugs and then later sex work. The two often spent time at an abandoned house taken over by drug users.
Stephanie's mother had done everything she could think of to try to get her daughter out of that life. Stephanie spoke of cleaning up, but was always drawn back in. Her mother told her that she was always welcome back home, but Stephanie did not take her up on her offer.
I was just thinking about sex work in general. We talk a lot about sex workers in the context of serial killers because they are a vulnerable part of our population, right?
Yeah, they're often the victims.
Exactly. Yeah. But I do want to also note that there are people who are engaged in sex work who want to be there. It's not always
trafficking,
and trafficking is another aspect, but it's not always people who are forced into it or have limited choices. There are some people who do find sex work intentionally and do find it to be liberating. I don't know why, but I felt like I needed to say that. Now, so Marianne's mother, Kathleen Scott, last spoke with her daughter 3 weeks before her death when Kathleen told her she couldn't live with her anymore. Kathleen thought that Marianne went to live with a friend.
But when she hadn't heard from her in weeks, she began to worry. She started searching areas where she knew her daughter hung out and talked with family members about filing a missing persons report.
Cox had killed the two women, then loaded both of their bodies into his Buick and dumped them in a wooded area. Their bodies were found during a week that saw two other murders and a rape in Orlando's tourist district. So people were kind of freaking out.
Yeah. Kathleen, who is Marianne's mother, was racked with guilt over her decision not to let Marianne live with her, wondering how she could have practiced tough love and not have lost her daughter forever. Mm. She ended up raising Marianne's son.
Oh my gosh, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
On the morning of August 1st, 1966, shots ring out from the observation deck of the clock tower on the University of Texas campus. It marks the infamous beginning of the modern era of mass shootings in America.
You're listening to Stop the Killing podcast. Join us as we take you behind the crime scene tape to explain global mass shootings and mass attacks. I'm Sarah Ferris, but more importantly, this is Catherine Schweit, the former head of the FBI's active shooter program.
I spent 5 years as the FBI's top executive looking for answers to the mass shooting crisis. I've been at the shooting scenes. I've traced heroic acts of bravery. And I've sat silently and listened to the heart-wrenching stories from survivors.
Amongst this horror, there is hope. We all hold the key to stop the killing. You just need to know how to unlock the door. Download Stop the Killing and be part of the solution. Search Stop the Killing on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual suspects.
True terrors of horror, bizarre happenings, unexplainable events. On our podcast, Disturbed, terror takes center stage. Each episode is a journey into the darkest corners of human existence, delving into bone-chilling tales of kidnappings, serial killers, maniacs, and the very essence of your worst nightmares coming to life on this weekly true horror show. Disturbed is not for the faint of heart. It's an exploration of real, unadulterated horror sourced from everyday people. Each episode is a descent into the macabre, where we narrate stories that will leave you on the edge of your seat and crawling in your skin. We navigate the disturbing narratives that lurk in the shadows, offering a raw and unfiltered listen into the most terrifying aspects of the human experience. Enter at your own risk and let the unsettling tales unfold in the haunting realm of Disturbed. And remember, listeners, stay safe out there.
So now let's get into the investigation and the arrest. So after seeing the composite and the photo of the car, Tracy Adams called police to say she had been attacked by the same man. Later, while Tracy was in a grocery store with her daughter, she saw the man who assaulted her. She wrote down the license plate number of his car and called the police. Yeah!
Got him!
Way to go, Tracy! Woo!
This information led police to Frederick Pete Cox, 43, who was arrested on May 21st. Police searched his house and car and found a 9mm gun and blood on the carpet of his Buick. The blood was later identified as Marianne Vopel's. Also found in his car was half an ID card belonging to one of the women.
So Cox was charged with first-degree murder. As the investigation progressed, additional charges included two counts of attempted murder.
Marianne's mother, Kathleen Scott, said she was pleased that police had a suspect so she could get some closure. She had been afraid that it would take years. She also commented that the photo of Cox, who was graying at the temples and wearing a polo shirt, didn't fit the image of the killer she had imagined. She said, quote, "He looks like somebody's father, not a serial killer," unquote.
Yeah, that's interesting how he didn't look to me like other killers we've covered in the past. He looked like Uncle Ben.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of serial killers actually don't look like serial killers.
You're right.
They just look like normal. Regular, BTK.
Yes, regular.
Looks pretty normal.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's if the call is coming from inside the house, it's always somebody regular, right? So if you're out here looking for like a boogeyman, there really isn't one.
It's just the guy who looks normal.
Yeah. Although they did find aliens in Mexico. I don't know.
So I heard. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
They
look like paper mache.
That's what I thought. I thought it's somebody missing their
I'm not buying it, Mexico.
Exactly. I don't think so either. The aliens are already here. Okay. Thank you. So now we're going to get into the trial. And I can tell you that the defense said Cox was mentally ill or did not plan the murders and asked that he be tried for no more than second degree murder because the killings were not premeditated due to his mental state. Second degree murder is not punishable by death. So that's why he was trying to pull that one.
Yep.
But he was charged with first degree murder and the prosecution asked for the death penalty.
The trial began in February of 2001. During the trial, Cox began claiming paralysis in his legs and right arm and was wheeled in a wheelchair. There was no medical evidence supporting his claim and his defense claimed the paralysis was psychological.
Kind of reminds me of the Golden State Killer, like when he was finally caught.
Oh. Oh, right. Like, yeah.
His voice was all
infirm.
Yeah. His, you know, in a wheelchair. And I don't know if 100% bought that.
Buy it. Yeah. Yeah.
So this also seems like a scam, Cox. So the trial ended in a mistrial when jurors could not agree on conviction. There was one holdout and the rest of the jury could not convince him to convict.
Cox was tried again in April of 2001. This time it was a bench trial and he was convicted. Mm-hmm. But the sentencing phase was held up for nearly 2 years due to questions about his mental state.
Cox was still claiming paralysis and assistant state attorney Jeff Ashton commented, quote, "If he's a faker, he's so persistent a faker, there's got to be some mental issue." That's interesting. He's faking for so long. He just must be crazy because this if he was faking, he would have it would have revealed itself by now.
Right.
So isn't that just another way of saying, oh, maybe there is something wrong with his
yeah.
goal?
And that was from the prosecutor.
Yeah, okay. So that's kind of funny.
Yeah, it is.
The way he worded it is what I'm laughing at.
He's a persistent faker.
So there's got to be some mental issue. It just seems like something I could see Will Ferrell saying it or Conan O'Brien. and the idea of doing so makes me laugh. Anyway, incidentally, Jeff Ashton was the prosecutor in the case against Casey Anthony. Whoa! Yeah. Oh my God!
Whoa! I couldn't wait till you got to that part.
It's like my eyes like stopped dead in their tracks. Wow! This feels very sick and wrong to say, but I'm a very sick person. I feel bad that I enjoyed seeing that name. Wow.
I recognized his name, so I Googled him because I'm like, I think there's a prosecutor in Casey Anthony's case, and so I Googled it.
Okay. Yeah. See, isn't it so wonderful to have a resident OG trying to help us put these pieces together? Thank you, Beth. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Wow. That's almost as good as a DNA solve. Woo!
Eventually, after getting input from the victim's family members, prosecutors dropped the death penalty. The family members did not want the case to drag on for years. And in January of 2003, Cox was sentenced to life. Times three.
I can understand the family's desire to do that.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that the prosecutors got input from the victim families. Yeah. That's, I rarely say, way to go, prosecutors, but I think I'm going to say it in this case. So now let's get into where are they now? Well, Cox is currently incarcerated at the Suwanee Correctional Institution in Live Oak, Florida. So now let's get into our takes, friend. I was thinking that I really enjoyed us having more of a discussion.
Oh, okay.
So I have read your takes, but if you don't mind, I might interrupt in between.
Sure.
Okay, cool.
All right. Okay. So this guy reminds me of the Grim Sleeper.
Oh, how so?
He was kind of under the radar. He looked like a regular guy.
Yeah.
Even though it sounds like he was kind of freaky deaky.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
I don't think it was unusual for him to go to sex workers.
Yeah.
I think he probably did that all the time.
Judging by some of the quotes he maybe uttered to other people in this case. Yeah.
Yeah. And getting caught in an adult bookstore masturbating.
Well, there's that. Yeah.
Whatnot. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the unusual thing was not that he went to sex workers. It was when he started killing them.
Right. Because. Yeah. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, OG.
And he was 43. That's an unusual age to start murdering, to start being a serial killer. That doesn't usually happen. Most serial killers start younger.
Okay.
At least there's usually some similar crime when they're younger, at least.
Yeah.
So I do wonder if there were previous victims and we're just not aware of them.
Yes, that is my thought as well, because the span of time, I think it's maybe a year or two that the murders took place.
No, it was months.
Okay, so very small window of time.
Yeah.
Starting at age 43, that is very unusual.
Right, it is. But if these were his only victims, maybe he was having a midlife crisis.
Oh,
I don't know.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, the crime started in 1997. Mm-hmm. He wasn't able to go to the reserves anymore because somewhere around 1996, so like a year earlier, he hurt his back, so he couldn't be in the reserves anymore.
Okay.
So. And that was probably a big part of his ego.
Yes. Yep.
So there was that. And then he was walking with a cane.
Right. My thought is, you know, what made him was no longer. And that definitely might pose a crisis.
Yes. Yeah. So he may have been in some kind of crisis. Mm-hmm. And maybe when he propositioned Tracy, who refused his advances, he got mad and shot her. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't the plan. Like, it just happened.
Oh.
And then it turned out that he liked it.
Oh,
so
we've
talked. He kept doing it.
Yes, 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 yes. I feel like we've had this exact same line in more than one case script before.
Yes, yeah.
It wasn't on purpose, but it turned out he liked it. And
yeah,
I agree.
He liked it. He liked it a lot.
A lot. Yeah. Like the Sandlot. Yeah.
In any case, I think the fact that he walked with a cane and looked like someone's dad disarmed his victims. They weren't expecting him to be a serial
killer. Very unassuming. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Very disarming. Is this man coming to sell me rice? Do you work for Uncle Ben? Somebody told you you look like the man on the rice box.
That was my thought
when I saw the photo.
He looks like Uncle Ben.
That's what I'm sorry. I'm sorry to any Uncle Ben enthusiasts. I don't mean to hurt you in any way. Yeah, I agree. All the victims were just happened to be sex workers. Not all of them.
Tracy wasn't.
Right, Tracy wasn't. But you know, I feel like this goes without saying. It doesn't matter what these people did, you shouldn't kill somebody.
Yeah, it doesn't mean they should be killed, for Christ's sakes.
Exactly. Yeah. Not a license to have your life taken away. And
that sex work is work.
It is work. I couldn't agree more. I mean, I'm talking pension plans, benefits, paid time off. Seriously, like, imagine.
We should have that.
Anyway, I had never heard of Mr. Frederick Pete Cox. Disappointing that there wasn't more information about the victims, but we know why.
But we mined the internet for all the information we could get, and this is it.
I even asked ChatGPT. Do you understand? So anyway, but again, love and light to the victims and everybody left in the wake.
Yeah.
Let's move on now to how not to get murdered. If you love true crime and you don't want to die, here's a tip for you.
This segment is not intended to be victim blaming. We thought of this segment because I read somewhere that a lot of people listen to true crime because they want to know what they can do to be safer. This is not meant to blame the victims. It's just learning from other people's experiences.
So this is a tip from one of our fruities on Instagram, Heather.
Instagram.
So Heather said, "Hey, ladies, love the podcast. Your empathy towards the why made you so special. I wanted to share this how not to get murdered tip. Essentially, ask your rideshare driver to say your name first so you can confirm they aren't just a random car. So you go in there and you say, what's my motherfucking name? Snoop Wendy Williams. Just kidding. So back to Heather's tip. Make them say your name first so you can confirm. This actually came from a story. She gave us the link of the story in her message, but there was a killing of a South Carolina student who mistook a car for Uber prompts.
Oh,
rideshare safety campaign.
That's
so
sad.
Yeah, it's really sad. Thank you for sharing the article and the tip, Heather. And we hope you have a great day too. So thank you. That's a fire ass tip.
Yeah, thanks, Heather.
All right. Well, let's get into the shout out portion of our show where we shout out any content by or about any BIPOC or LGBTQ+ or marginalized folk or any true crime goodies. Okay, so The Other Black Girl is a program I just started watching on Hulu, and it's an American comedy, drama, mystery, thriller, horror show. Basically, it has everything, and it's based on a novel by Zakiya Delilah Harris, and I've never read it. But the main character is a black girl named Nella. She's an editorial assistant, and she's the only black girl in the office for a long time. But then this girl, Hazel, gets hired. And at first, it seems like, okay, we got each other's back. But then it seems like they don't. And the reason why is sinister. Like, there's something going on. So anyway, The Other Black Girl on Hulu, very enjoyable.
I have that on my watch list, so I'm going to have to get on it.
It's really good. Download it for the plane ride to CrimeCon in Orlando.
Good idea.
Universal Studios, Orlando, Florida. And then I was going to shout out American Filth. I've only listened to the trailers. I haven't got to sit and listen to the episodes yet. American Filth is a podcast hosted by a comedian, and she talks about cases about like founders, capitalists, crooks, sex scandals.
Dirty, dirty stuff.
Filthy. The filthiest. That's cool for your ears. And And it is just dives into the filthier side of American history. So if you're really into history, trash, dirt, crime, all the stuff,
right on.
This is the podcast for you. I can't wait to actually listen to it. Let us know, Fruities, what you think of it. If this is a good recommendation and if you enjoyed it.
All right.
What do you got, Beth?
I wanted to shout out a documentary on Stars called BMF Blowing Money Fast.
Yes.
So I had shouted out the TV show BMF before. Mm-hmm. This is the real story. This is a documentary about the real people. Mm-hmm. And it tracks the rise and fall of the most notorious drug syndicate in American history, Black Mafia Family.
Hell yeah.
As chronicled through the firsthand accounts of BMF members, insiders, associates, and celebrity figures close to the Flannery family.
Ooh, this I love.
Yeah.
This sounds so exciting. So that is The Other Black Girl on Hulu, a podcast called American Filth, and BMF, Blowing Money Fast, a program on Stars that tracks the Black Mafia family. Oh my goodness. Look at that. That's the end. That's the end. No. All right. Well, that's the end of the program. But in the meantime, Beth, where can the people find us?
Our website is fruitloopspod.com, and we use Fruit Loops Pod for all of our social media. The footnotes for each episode can be found on our website. Plus, check it out for the different ways that you can support the show and become a Fruit Loops patron. You can also support us by supporting our sponsors or by giving us a 5-star review.
5 stars only, please.
5 stars only, please. Also, don't forget to subscribe.
Okay, so this is a weekly podcast and new episodes drop every Thursday. So until next time, look alive, y'all. It's crazy out there. All that to say, what were we talking about?
What's this podcast about?
I know. Whoa, I'm so sorry. Okay, now I'm back.
Are we back? We're okay. Back. All right. Okay, so let's take a break.
Let's take a quick break and then we're gonna get into the story when we come back. That's a lot of conflict.
Yeah.
Shouldn't at some point somebody give up?
Yeah, just stop.
Yeah. But no, they didn't. I don't think I want that.
No.
Ugh. There's got to be an adult film somewhere that has a beginning such as this.
Boom,
chicka, wow, wow. Hey, do you need your tire changed? Oh, ow. Ugh. Ugh. Cox was charged with first-degree murder. Murder. Yes, it was him. Officer, there he is right over there. I'm sorry. Officer, arrest this man. It's like my eyes like stopped dead in their tracks. Wow.
He liked it. He liked it a lot.
A lot. Oh, I can't believe it. Oh, my God.
So excited. This is so exciting.
It's very exciting. Okay.
Hi, I'm Sean McCabe.
And I'm Carrie McCabe.
We are, well, married, obviously, but we're also obsessed with the darker side of things.
True crime stories, alien abductions, poltergeists. If it leaves you scratching your head and keeping those lights on at night, we want to hear about it.
That's why we host the podcast, Ain't It Scary, with Sean and Carrie.
Every week, we bring our listeners a true story guaranteed to send chills down your spine. From history's most brutal serial killers to the mystery of spontaneous human combustion.
Yep, lots of these stories leave unanswered questions behind, and you'll get to poke through the rubble of the evidence with a hardened skeptic and...
someone whose mind is more open to fun.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
You can find Ain't It Scary with Sean and Carrie wherever you get your podcasts. And on social media at Ain't It Scary. Come play with us.
Hi, I'm Matt Harris. Seton Tucker and I host the podcast Impact of Influence, which for 2 years covered in depth Alec Murdoch, who was eventually convicted in 2023 of murdering his wife Maggie and son Paul. That story continues to evolve, and we will cover that. Plus, we will tell you stories of other true crime events that have happened in the South. Please join us on Impact of Influence. And give us a follow on the Impact of Influence Facebook page.